It's quite hard when you're in Indian. Your parents are not quite open to the idea of visual effects. We feel the courses, now I know everything in New York, fine, I can go ahead with it and try to get a job in the industry. But it doesn't work that way. Everything changes as per the plate. You know the techniques, but then when it comes to actually putting down on what you're doing, it really comes down to understanding the shot itself. Don't get scared when you get the feedback, because you're going to do that 4 to 5 times a day. You're going to get feedback 4 to 5 times. So you have to get used to that.
Hi, so welcome to VFX Artist Podcast. This week we have Rishabh Laheja, who is a junior compositor at MPC. And I've been talking to Rishabh for quite a while, actually. We've been chatting on the chat from before you started. So yeah, you've come a long way in actually quite a short time. So I thought it was quite an exciting story. Was it a year ago?
It is. I actually started at MPC a year ago.
Okay. And so before that, probably like a few months before that, maybe, you got in touch with your showreel, which was Personal Projects. And then we had a chat, and I think it was me and some other artists you contacted.
Quite a few,
And then you got some feedback, and then you put a reel together, and now, you know, you're working on you've just recently worked on House of Dragons. Rather than me telling the story, let's let you tell the stories.
It's a rollercoaster ride, you might want to buckle up. There's a tipping point for every artist, like some movie or some film or TV series that got us inspired to get into visual effects. And for me, this was right around February of 2020, when I was watching 1917. I think before that, I did want to come into VFX. Things that inspired me was Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgames, but I didn't quite like decide, okay, I'm going for visual effects. But it was for some reason, I was watching 1917. It was a late night film. I was alone. I was coming back home. It was traffic. For some reason, it was raining in February. I don't know. It just made a full, you know, it just got dramatized or something like that. And I was like, I want to do visual effects. And before that, I was doing a bit of animation, but I wasn't quite good at animation. I had done a few courses, but not that well. But I was like, okay, I want to go into visual effects. And I didn't know how to get started, you know. I didn't know how to find, because there wasn't quite enough at that time. I mean, there was, but like not on my search engine. So like I didn't have any clue of how do I begin. And the pandemic came around at that time. It was a bad period for everyone. I agree it was for me as well. But it was, in a way, a boon in disguise. And I started to, you know, look out how, you know, look at all the different aspects of VFX. And then compositing was something that interested me the most, because it's, you're working on the final shot. You're working, you know, you're working on everything that you receive from other departments. And I thought, okay, this sounds interesting. And maybe this is something I want to do. The shots of 1917 was like, that's where I was like, okay, compositing it is. And confirm, this is what I'm doing. Now I need to find how do I get above with it. So that's exactly when I started talking to people on LinkedIn, that quite early, actually, to understand how should I get about started with this industry. And I think the first person who I spoke to, and I remember it, was Josh Parks. He still is like my role model, like always has been. And there were quite other few people as well that I communicated with, and I decided to start with courses. So the initial courses that I did was FX PhD. It has a plethora of courses, not just for compositing, but like Blender and Maya and even Unreal now. Like I've seen their latest upcoming ones. So that's where I started. I took a subscription of FX PhD for a month or two. And there's where I understood the basics of Nuke and how I'm going to use the interface. How do I do the basics of Roto and Paint is what I learned from it. Most of tracking and stuff. And then I did another course. Then I did Josh's course, which is the monster course and the green screen and the deep one. And it's really a good course. Like even today, when I'm at work and I'm jumping, like suppose I'm on a show that had a lot of green screen and now I'm moving on a show on CG, I really use those courses to brush up. So in a way, it's like a good pocket handy thing, you know, you could just always go back to and refer. And his courses are really tailored well. So definitely recommend those courses for anyone who's going to try it, because it's so handy, it's so short, and it's so well explained that I still refer it, you know, even after a year or two, I still refer it. And then I started to get in touch with Josh, and I couldn't do the 101 because it was quite expensive for me. So I started to network with quite more people on LinkedIn. And then I came across this person, Keegan Harris. He runs a Patreon. You subscribe for the Patreon, and then you can do one-on-one with him. And you can also do the plates that he provides. He also has short videos and stuff. I'm very thankful. Today, everything I am is because of Keegan and another compositor, Marcel, from Germany. So what I used to do was I learned these courses, right? But that's not it. Like, we feel the courses, now I know everything in Nuke, it's fine. I can go ahead with it and try to get a job in the industry. But it doesn't work that way. It's not like other industries. You really have to have a reel ready to, you know, in the creative industry, you need the reel. And now I was thinking, how do I get about started with this reel thing? Like, what kind of shots should I do? How do I approach and stuff? So it's actually... when I started thinking about doing the personal projects, it's when I realized that courses is not enough. You have to, you know, every project, you will use different techniques to do this. You know, you are trying to do something. You know you are going to do this, like say you want to do King. But then you are going, everything changes as per the plate. And that's the interesting thing about VFX. Like, you know the techniques, but then when it comes to actually putting down on what you're doing... it really comes down to understanding the shot itself and the plate and everything around that. So this is where I did the one-on-ones with Keegan. I used to meet him on the weekends. So on the weekend, I used to have a call with him. He used to explain me, okay, tell me an idea that you have for a shot. Okay, then I would tell him the idea of a shot. And we used to take the shot from the idea to the final execution of it, like the final shot. So we used to plan the whole process, like what are you... planning to do, what kind of CGs are you trying to look for? And then I used to look for plates. I used to search plates online where I can find good plates, good CGs. And I did quite a bit of lighting as well. I asked him to teach me lighting as well because I didn't know that. And I did need CG for doing some CG integration shots. So for lighting, he taught me lighting as well, and he taught me compositing, and we used to do it like, so on the weekends, we would do the call, we would decide a plan of how we're going to go about the shot. During the week, I used to work on the shot after my work hours. I was working in another industry, and I didn't like my job.
What were you doing? Can I ask what you were doing?
I was Ernst & Young. I was working in the IT and consulting side of things. And so after the 8, 9, 10 hours of that work, and then I used to sit through the night for working on my shots. So it was really like a grind that I went through. But it was exciting because that was something I wanted to do. I wanted to get into that. So I put in the extra efforts and I sat late nights. And the reason I did late nights is because that would be like an evening or afternoon in London. So when I'm doing a call with him on the weekends, we used to even work weekends sometimes. So I would sit after 8 and I'm working on my shots and then I'm getting on a call with him. So during the week, I used to work on the shot and send it to him on SingSketch. SingSketch came like very handy when it came to getting feedbacks. And when I was doing my personal projects in the beginning, I used SingSketch a lot to send it to people. Now that I have a reel, I send the reel. But when I wanted to get my each shot reviewed, I would use SingSketch.
Yeah, we still use it actually with some clients as a facility. So it's a useful tool.
Yeah, it's quite useful. Yeah. So I would use SingSketch and I would send it to him and he would do the annotations on it. And I used to work on the shot during the week, and on the weekend I used to show it to him. And then that's how I went on building shots by shot. And then once I had a collation of a few shots, I used to make a reel and then send it to people on LinkedIn and try to get more feedback. You know, a diverse feedback helps in understanding the kind of shot, you know, different views on how to do a shot. And it's so great to know everyone's perspective. Everybody has a different perspective on that shot. And then the ideas that come in, and then I would try to see, oh, maybe I can do this, maybe I can do that. And that's how I went on building the shot. And then Marcel was the other mentor I found myself on LinkedIn. So with him as well, I used to do this on the weekends. So like two mentors. And then I started joining this London Seagraph event, which was Bring Your Own Composite. It was so great because I met quite a lot of people on that and got feedback from quite a lot of people.
Remember who reviewed your shots? Do you remember who reviewed
I'm going
your
to tell
shots?
You that. I'm going to tell you that. So what I used to do, I used to know who the guests are coming. Okay, and I always wanted to get it reviewed by Josh and Chris Fryer. I used to do. So they on the event during the event, they'll be like, they'll send you a Google form and they'll say, okay, choose your mentors. And I always had it written on a sticky note on the side. So I would just copy paste Josh Fox, Chris Fryer, and then cross fingers. And then they used to put us in the break room with the mentor. And it always used to be Josh and Chris. So it was so great. Like, I wanted them, and because I couldn't do Josh's one-on-one. So I used to always try and chase him every time I got... Yeah, I used to chase him on LinkedIn. I used to chase him on the London Seagraph, bring your own comp, this thing. I used to chase Chris Fryer on that. And then I used to write back on LinkedIn to them, like, okay, you gave me feedback on the shot and I have worked on it. And then I used to, like, all the, I used to take SyncSketch and they used to annotate on it on the during the event. So we had 1 hour with each mentor. Actually, not 1 hour. It's supposed to be 15 to 20 minutes, but it went on for 1 hour sometimes. And then even I think you might be knowing this person, Katerina from...
She's fantastic. She's a really good composer. Yeah.
So she she was the third one I used to get in touch with, I think. I always wanted to get in touch with Jamie, but never happened. And then I think these three were like the main people I used to get in touch with. So yeah, that. And so... I used to work on the feedback from these Seagraph events. And I think I attended 7 of these. Bring your own comms. I think by now the count is 7 of how many I've attended. So it was a great place to network with people. It was a great place to get feedback. Highly recommend for anyone who's starting out to try and get into these events and try to get feedback. And then, yeah, that's how I kept building Reel. Kept on... networking with people on LinkedIn. And then I made a good friend who's a rotoprep artist on LinkedIn. And then he and I did this freelance work for a client in UK. So that was another exciting thing to do it, you know, a project.
Actual job.
With someone. Yeah, yeah. I did quite a few, I think 2 freelance works in the UK.
Yeah, this. If you were wondering why I was distracted, I was totally. But my daughter put my cat in, so she decided to be on the show with you today. So you got an actual project, a live project, which is different from a personal project because you now you had a client.
Yeah, so for a short film like in the UK, so we did it remotely, and so he was the rotoprep artist, John William, and I was the compositor. And he used to send me the rotors that he did for each shot. And so that's how I got a hang of, you know, how the things are supposed to be done. And even SyncSketch gave a hang of how the RV is used. Like, you know, when I got into the industry, I got quite comfortable with it after all of that. And yeah, I think I did the freelance work for quite a few months. And then, oh yeah, my plans were always, because it was not working out, you know, like for so many months I was trying to get into the industry and was not working out. And I had planned for a Bournemouth University, UK, and I had an admit and I got COVID the same month when I was supposed to pay the deposit, I got COVID. So the plans scrapped, but I had, and that's the same month I had an interview with MPC. So it was like, maybe it was meant to be. Who knows? It was a kind referral, I will say. Like, it was a kind referral because of why I got MPC. That's how I began at MPC. And the good thing at MPC was I was first put on a show which was 2D. So I got... And I think we were doing tracking ourselves on those shots. So it was a good practice to, like, get my basics cleared. Like, I did a lot of paint work and tracking in roto and basics of keying. And a lot of warping and stuff. And then I was put on a show which was CG. So I felt like I'm going in a... It's a learning curve, you know, like...
Yes, it's a good project progression.
It was a progression for sure, yeah. And then my third project was... So the CG one was The Prehistoric Planet. And then the third one was House of Dragons, which was both together. Like, we had a lot of keying and then we had a lot of CG. So yeah, it was like a combined... combined thing. It's fun.
These are very good first projects, I've got to say. I mean, you're very lucky with your first projects. Very big projects, very cool projects. And some good shots as well. So, I mean, and also before you did House of Dragons, and I think before you did Prehistoric Planet, you actually posted a dragon personal project
So I was participating for the Rookie Awards of 2022, and I knew this was the last time I can do it because the criteria said that you have to do it within 1 year of being in the industry. So I was like, okay, this time I'm going to do personal projects for it. I did two personal projects to finish for the rookies. Again, the same thing, going on Sing Sketch, running to Bjork, chasing Josh, chasing Chris Fryer. This time I also chased this guy, Javier. Very nice guy, like he's from Canada. He helped me throughout my rookies thing because we were doing this dragon shot. So for dragon shot, again, the idea and execution, from idea to execution, Keegan. For reviews, Marcel, Chris Fryer, Josh, and this time Javier. And that's how I finished my rookies thing. And I did not expect, like, another interesting about the anime dragon thing. It was a friend of mine from Germany who's an animator, and he was interviewing for Pixelmondo for House of Dragons. And he told me, I need to have a dragon shot for my reel because I'm interviewing for it. I was like, okay, fine, maybe you animate a dragon and I'll comp it. And he said, okay, fine, let's do this. Because he was my friend from when I was doing the animation course. So we were in touch this time. And we were in touch from quite a long time, and I told him, let's do this, let's, you know, do a collaborative project. And he got a job at Pixelmondo, and he worked on House of Dragons. And because of the dragon shot that I put on, because he insisted me to post it on LinkedIn, so I said, okay, fine, let's do this. I posted on LinkedIn, and even I think it was just a 12-day gap after which even I got put on House of Dragons. So it was so exciting. Like, I did not expect that to happen, but yeah, that's how it went. Like, some things are late.
Some things are meant to be. And you put the effort in. I mean, it's quite good to have a personal project that's quite targeted to a show that's up and coming.
I didn't know at the time that MPC had House of Dragons coming up. And, like, I had really no idea about it. I was just like, my consideration was just to get one personal project done. But then things worked out magically. Someone at MPC might have noticed and they decided, maybe it was my heads, I don't know, but
that's very cool. Where are you based in India?
Out of curiosity. I'm based in Mumbai.
Mumbai. Yes. So obviously most of the work is either in Mumbai or Bangalore generally, I think, for at least for the outsourced stuff that we do.
I think Bangalore is where MPC was always there, but they're opening an office in Mumbai soon. And I think, I'm not quite sure, but Mumbai might become like an epicenter for VFX. Because if you see, after 2020, I think Framestore opened in Mumbai, Outpost has opened in Mumbai, Fox VFX has opened in Mumbai, ILM is opening in Mumbai, they announced it on Diwali, and then there's MPC opening, so I think Mumbai might have a boom of VFX studios.
Mm. So you were working remotely.
I'm working remotely.
So you were working remotely via Bangalore before?
Yes. I'm still working remotely because they haven't opened the office in Mumbai. So I requested for a transfer. So I didn't want to go to the Bangalore office. And I requested for a transfer for Mumbai and I got it. So working from home, yes. Yeah.
Because they're not near. I looked on a map when you mentioned this.
No, they're not near. I would have had to fly and stay there. Like, I can't even travel.
I mean, these distances are pretty big. I mean, I think if you went that far in England, you'd be in another country for sure. My cat has got... She got a mouse. And so my daughter came and locked her in our room. And now we have a mouse. We have all the animals on this show. We have dragons, we have cats, and we have...
and we have mouse
We have a mouse, which is now going to be taken out into the wild.
You have cat and a mouse? Or the mouse is just caught?
She caught the mouse, and I think I'm afraid to say that I thought it was a mouse was going to be freed. But I think it's actually a dead mouse. It's a very sad moment for the VFX Artist podcast. Let me shut the door. Dragons, mice, cats. I guess what you're working on now is on NDA. Is there anything else that you've worked on recently that is out of NDA that you can talk about?
Well, I'm working now. I'm not sure if I can say, but it is my first film.
Very cool. Very cool. You're working remotely. And so remote work has continued after the initial lockdowns and you're working remotely full time. Is that generally normal or is it just in cases where you're not near the office?
No, when they're going to open the office in Mumbai, I'm sure it's going to be back to office for everyone. For anyone who's working for anyone who's not taken a transfer for Mumbai and they are allotted for the Bangalore one, they had to return. Like, there's no hybrid either. It's strictly work from office. And I think quite a few studios are doing that. They're not offering hybrid as far as I know. There are a few who have not opened up yet. Like, I think, as far as I know, Outpost is not opened physically, so you're working remotely if you're working for Outpost. And I think even DNEG is offering remotely for quite some time. But otherwise, they're calling you back to the studio.
The other thing I thought was quite interesting is you didn't actually do roto prep for very long, actually. Within 1 year, you're already compositing. So that's, I was curious about that because
I joined as a compositor, yes. It was I joined as a compositor, and but on the show I had to do roto sometimes when it was like urgent client need, and we can't send it to the roto department. I think on House of Dragons also quite a few shots I had to end up doing roto because there was like no time to send it back. So on House of Dragons as well, I did a lot of manual roto, and So it was like the shot was not roto entirely. So it was like roto required in that shot.
But that's again different because rotoing for your own shots, and you don't have to roto everything. As a compositor, you know what you need to roto. Yeah. If you have to roto for someone else, you often have to roto a lot more.
Right? A lot more, yeah.
You're not exactly sure what they need.
So even you have to roto more than the cut, right? Like,
yeah.
In that case.
So I mean, but that's because initially when obviously the Hollywood and big studios began outsourcing to India, the first work was, I guess, the grunt work, the match move and the roto and the
prep. Yes, a lot of that is still prominent. Like, there's a lot of roto and prep that comes into India. Lots.
But it's quite exciting that there's quite high-end comp happening there as well.
I think the industry is just going to keep growing in India. So, like, because it's like cheap labor for the whole bid thing, right? So a lot of shots comes in, like a lot of them, and the crew is also big. So, yeah, it's insane.
crews are very big. Yeah, I mean, and potentially can be huge. Can you tell me about what sort of hours do you do normally?
So it's actually project-based. Like, sometimes if the project is London-facing, so you will have the meetings with... So we're always having cross-site meetings with London or Montreal, and if your project has London-facing, then it's going to be like you're going to show the shots to London in the afternoon, and if it's Montreal-facing, you're going to show it in the evening. So for every project, the timings are going to change based on the supervisor over there. But otherwise, it's any which way is insane. Like, because you are working quite before you have to show a version to London, and you have to get it approved by your leads in India itself, and then you're showing a version to the UK supervisor, and after that you're working on the shot again once you get the call notes. So it's like you're working before that call and you're working after that call. Same for Montreal. Like, even though it's like a 6:30, 7, so sometimes the meeting goes on to 7:38, but you're still working after that.
So you would be expected to do most of the call notes for the next day, for that same evening, essentially, after the call.
Sometimes. I mean, on this project, which we're doing, it's a bit light towards, like, at this point of time. I've had good, comfortable team. I've had a very good lead. I'm having a very good lead on this show. And it's been a different environment recently. Even the work hours are, like, fine. As I said, it's project-based. Sometimes it's crazy.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's lenient. But when the deadline comes, it's crazy anyways. Like, when you're closer to the end of the show, it's crazy. And there's no OT pay. That's, I think, It's not in UK either, I suppose.
No, although most companies in the UK have what they call time off in lieu. So essentially, you won't get extra hours you do, but if you, for example, come in on a Saturday, or if you do work sort of late into the night, you can potentially get extra days off that you can use after.
But you get it for your OT of during the week as well?
You can do it.
If you do late nights on a week.
It depends on the company. It depends on the company. It okay. does vary by company. It's never exactly that. But and you, often it's sometimes it's more formalized. You get this amount for these specific times. Sometimes it's very much you kind of ask. You know, especially smaller places, much more of a sort of, well, you know, I worked late last night, but today I need to go and pick up my kids from school or whatever. And you can do things like that, but you can't necessarily like build up extra days off unless you work, for example, a Saturday or a Sunday. But
right.
it's not a standard. There's a general expectation that there will be time off in lieu, but it's not actually, it's not always in every contract. So it varies.
Right. We do OT a lot sometimes. For this project, somehow OT has not been that much, which is why I'm like surprised this project is like really good. I'm quite happy. It's coming to an end. But then this has been the only different one. Otherwise, it has been insane. And on many projects, it's insane work hours. So nothing you can do about it.
No.
Because a lot of work comes in. So
I'm going to go back even further now. So before like you say, you actually went to college and you studied something completely different. But you did you always have an interest in this kind of creative work?
Oh, yeah. So I was creative even back when I was in the 11th and 12th. I used to write comic books when I was in the 10th standard or the 11th one, I started writing comic books. So I always had this storytelling side of me that I was always interested in, and I used to hand draw them with a pen. Like I never needed the need for erasing it. I don't know, everyone asked me, why do you draw it with a pen? And I was like, I just got quite comfortable with it. And I used to write these comic books, which were like 100 or 200 pages or something. It was like my hobby. So I knew I had the creative side in me, but I didn't know exactly for what. And whenever I used to watch movies, I was always fascinated by it. I was always like, someday I want to do this, but I didn't know what the right path was. And it's quite hard when you're in Indian. Your parents are not quite open to the idea of visual effects. And it's not that known either. Even today, even though there's a big amount of people working in VFX in India, still, it's not the most appreciated line by the parents. So I didn't know exactly how to get into it, but I always had that desire. Then when I was in college, and I was I was doing computer science, and I was introduced to this subject, computer graphics, and I quite liked it, because it was like little animations that we were doing in it through coding. And I was like, I was interested in it. And during the end of college, you have to finish your final year project. And everybody did machine learning or crypto or something or the other. But I ended up making a game. And first I began with Unity. But towards the end, I moved to Unreal. I think I spent 2 to 3 months on that. And because I think something happened in Unity and it was not, like, we were not able to finish it. So we jumped into Unreal and did a project. And I finished the project, and I was displaying the project on in this science exhibition, like the exhibition that was held in college for all the final year projects, whatever you're doing. And there was a selection criteria, and mine was a different one. So they added the games. There was one thing I observed when I was presenting my game. Nobody was interested to see or play the game. Everybody was interested in the trailer that I made for the game. Like, I made a starting trailer before the game started. Like, I think you could click escape and just skip the trailer. But nobody wanted to skip the trailer. Everybody liked those dolly animations of the camera that I did, and the audio syncing with the shots that I was doing. And that made me think, this is something I like. That was all in Unreal, yeah. There's a I don't quite remember now. There was this sequencer. See, yeah. I think Unreal has changed quite a lot after COVID, like the version 5. I was using Unreal Engine 4. So I have to see how Unreal Engine 5 is. I haven't seen it yet. But during Unreal Engine 4, it was more game-related. And after that, they brought it all with visual effects and stuff. So yeah, I made the game and I saw everybody was interested in the trailer. And people asked, oh, you could do this trailer better. Because I didn't have that much of time for the trailer because I was focusing more on the game. But I saw people were focusing more on seeing the trailer and they kept asking me how you did that. So maybe that was another, that was actually the point I realized I want to learn animation. I enrolled for an animation, with an animation guy again in the UK. So, and I did like for 4 months animation with him, but animation was tough. Like, I hats off to animators. Like, you guys are creating magic. It's really tough. I tried so much, but it's really creative. And then I did this, it was this forum. That's where I met this animator friend of mine.
And it's interesting that even though animation for you didn't work out, it was a lucky contact, right? Because then that led to these collaborations, and that, you know, yes, that has helped your career in other ways.
Even the Raptor shot, I think the Raptor shot that you saw on my personal projects was also animated by him. It was one of his Raptor run cycles. And I said, let's comp it.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, that's cool. So you also, at one point, I know it was, I think COVID possibly put a spanner in the works, but at one point you were planning on getting a camera and doing some of your own filming. What were you planning to do?
Yes, I haven't done that yet. Maybe when I have a better salary or something. I think I contacted you like a few months back and I was like, I want to buy one, but maybe next year. Like, maybe that's one of my resolutions I'll keep for next year, buying a camera and learning that.
It's a luxury, but it is good for compositors to have some understanding of photography. But
I mean, when it comes to like understanding when you need a lens flare or when you need I really do want to learn camera for understanding it, like being a good compositor. Like, it's the stages that I want to grow in. So definitely getting a camera and learning that is the next aim that I have, the next goal. So, and it was like, I wanted to buy it for my birthday, which was in July. And I think even last July I thought about it, but never happened. So maybe next year, hopefully sooner.
No, but I mean, your career seems to be moving forward. So who knows? I'm sure you'll be able to get yourself a camera. What kind of projects would you like to work on moving forward?
Well, House of Dragons was definitely a dream project that came true. Maybe like Marvel or Star Wars, I don't know.
But are we talking films? You would like to move into, to stay in feature film? I know you said you've recently worked on a feature film.
Yeah, films and TV series is what I would like to continue to remain in.
One other thing I was going to ask is, obviously, we talk a lot about India regarding the outsourcing, but there have been some recent films like RRR. I'm not sure if you're...
Yes.
And that had a massive success.
I have not seen it yet.
And it's quite interesting that there are these Indian productions which are now, you know, getting this reputation, and they're not just executing Hollywood or you know, outsourced work, but they're actually creating some movies which are, you know, which people want to watch.
There is quite a potential. Yeah, there is quite a potential. I think Tollywood is doing well when it comes to VFX, and I think even Brahmastra was another film that was of Bollywood, which was heavily relied on VFX. I haven't seen either of those. I'm so sorry. I don't have views on that. But yeah, it's the industry in India is moving forward, not just when it comes to foreign companies coming in, but also the films that are being made here are realizing the need of visual effects.
Yeah. So obviously you've been working with a lot of London-based mentors, and you're working with supervisors in London and Mumbai, London and Montreal. And how are you finding that? What are they saying about where you're working? How do they, when you describe your experiences at work, do they find it comparable, or what things do you think are probably different?
So I think it's quite a different culture here. We don't speak to our supervisors directly.
Right.
We never have, like, most of the times. I think during one show, I think when I was beginning and I spoke to one of the supervisors from London, during the end of one of our projects, and he didn't know me because, like I said, we never speak to our supervisors. He did say, it was good to hear from someone from Bangalore team. I've never spoken to you people. He said that because how it works here is when you're doing the dailies, it's mostly the leads communicating with the supervisors over there. And project-wise, it depends. On certain projects, you're allowed to attend these calls, but you're on mute. You're not talking to anyone. So when your shot comes up, you're not directly speaking with the supervisor. You're just hearing it and noting down the points that he's pointing out. What he's pointing out. And on some shows, you don't attend the call at all. So you will either look at the annotations that you received, or you will look at the recording of what the conversation between the lead and sup has been. So I think I've never been in touch with any of my supervisors because of that. Because it doesn't work that way. You are not, and there are quite a few people working on from this end. So that's why they decide only the leads speaking.
So it's quite hierarchical. You speak with your direct superior, and then they speak with the next person up, and then they speak with the next person up.
Yes. It's quite hard.
There's an element of that everywhere, but yeah, there is a little bit more leeway in terms of speaking directly to the supervisor and attending dailies.
I have heard in the UK from quite a few people that they speak directly with their sups, but here I've never done that.
No, that's interesting. And also, another thing I've realized is your entire career has been remote. Is that right?
So far, yes.
It's just the timing of it is quite unusual, because something that was almost unprecedented and lots of people found difficult to adapt.
And I would definitely say it was difficult. Beginning as a junior compositor at MPC, right after, it's quite different than your personal projects. It's quite fast-paced. And so we have dailies like 4 to 5 times a day, you know? So it was quite taxing in the beginning. And I will say the first 5 months, it was very difficult. And it was even difficult to communicate with people. I used to still communicate with people on LinkedIn to ask how am I supposed to do certain stuff, because here it was difficult to ask around. Like I said, hierarchy. There's even hierarchy between the artists, so not everyone is open to helping. Sometimes they just leave you on read. Like when you're working remotely, this is something that happens. Everybody's so busy with their own shots, and deliveries are so fast that you're trying to communicate, but it's difficult. And then I would end up like just looking at the scripts and doing it on my own. So the first 5 months was definitely, definitely very difficult. And somehow I have managed through remote working, but it's difficult.
You have dailies 4 times a day. So that's quite a lot. I mean, most projects I've worked on, we have two morning and an afternoon dailies.
Exactly, that's what I've heard in the UK, it's like twice a day.
And twice a day,
but here it's like you have
twice a day is actually often sort of getting towards sort of the end of a project as it gets more intense. Often it's like once, it can be like dailies. Once a day. I mean, we have desk reviews at any time where your lead or supervisor will actually just review a shot. If you're in the office, they just walk past. If you're remote, then you would, you know, maybe on a one-on-one call, but or you just, you know, call them regarding a note that you're unsure about. But yeah, so you're having to produce updates for each dailies.
It's very fast paced. Like you'll not be working on one shot. You'll be assigned like more than one, say two, three, sometimes even 4 shots. And then you are working on it. In the morning dailies, you get a brief of each shot that you're supposed to do. So it's like morning at 9:30 a.m., you have the morning brief. And then around 12, you have to show a version. Or some projects, they expect you to show a version by 2. So let's take one example of one project where it was, I think I had to show a version at 12, then I had to also show another version by 2:33, and then we used to have the London call at 3:30. Then after that, we show a version at 5:30 based on the notes we took from the London call, and again at 5:30 we're showing it to our Indian lead, And then again, we are showing a version at around 7:30 or 8 or 9, depending on whatever notes he's given. And that's your EOD version. So it's 5 versions a day.
Right. Okay, 5 updates a day. That's quite intensive. I mean, it's quite common in advertising to be that sort of pace, really. But it's quite interesting for film. And although I would say that the first dailies you talk about, to me, that sounds more like what we would call rounds. So they're coming and they're giving you a brief. Yeah, you're not necessarily showing something. So. Yeah. So, but you're
sometimes what happens is if the brief is a sometimes what happens is if we got notes from UK or Montreal or whatever over the night, some of us will start working on the shot immediately at 9 a.m. and some of them tend to show it by 9:30 or 10 whenever the dailies are. So sometimes it's a brief for you, and sometimes you have a version and you're showing that in the morning.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, depending on whether you already had a shot or not. Yeah, of course.
For this project currently, we have the brief a bit later. So I tend to sometimes do this. Like, I'll just come in and I look on whatever shot I was assigned for during the week, if on any of those I got an annotation or any notes from abroad. And if I did, and if it's manageable for me to do, I'll just begin with it. And if I can show a version in the morning brief, I will. Otherwise, I'll just say, I've already started working on the shot, and do you have notes for me? Or do you want me to show you a version in this call? Just share screen and show you a version, and that's also fine. So, yeah.
No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you're getting actually really good results out of this. So, I mean, I can't really argue with some of the methodology here if it's working. I wanted to kind of conclude with, what would your advice be to someone in India now who's looking to move into VFX, if they're having this idea, whether they're studying or whether they're like yourself in a different job?
Well, it is a hard industry to get in. I will not deny that, but you have to put in the efforts. I will definitely recommend getting on LinkedIn, communicating with people, getting reviews, putting your shots on SyncSketch, getting reviews on your personal projects, improving on those reviews, not just like you got feedback and then you did nothing about it. You have to keep working on the shot. You have to show the feedback that you worked on. Maybe get back to the same person. They like it that you worked on it and you've gotten back. And keep working on your personal projects and keep applying. I know it's insane and there's a lot of competition and there's a lot of public in India. So it gets difficult during the hiring procedure, but keep doing working hard on that, keep learning, keep communicating, getting feedback, attend these Bring Your Own Comp by London Seagraph. It's very good. Like, you're getting, like, I think the first one that I attended and I got such massive notes, I remember that was the point I was like, you know, that the face where you're like, I've been doing this for so long, but I never expected that I would get so much of feedback. And that was, I think, I don't know. It was not Josh, the first one on my London Seagraph one. It was some Owen Barak Carroll from Framestore. And I think he's a supervisor now at Framestore. So definitely, like, if he's a supervisor now, it means he would have been a very good lead or senior compa. So massive notes. And definitely, I would recommend getting in touch with these people on LinkedIn. London Seagraph, keep working on your shots. You can post it on LinkedIn. I used to not quite post it on LinkedIn, but I used to at least message and get feedback. Don't get scared. Be humble. Don't have an ego. This field does not appreciate it. I don't know why there's not much help that comes around in India when I'm trying, and but I've seen, like, I have to appreciate the fact that when I speak to people abroad, there's always help there. So what I mean to say is people should be helpful here as well. I don't know why I never got that. And it is hard, but help each other. I mean, what's there to lose? And don't lose the big picture. Like, if you are, I know many people try and fail and then they just give up on the industry, and that's fine. But, you know, you have to keep trying and always have the bigger picture in your mind. You have there's always been a tipping point for us to start in this industry, like some movie or some series that we've watched and we wanted to get into it. So if you really want to get into it, you have to put in the hard work. Don't get scared when you get the feedback, because you're going to do that 4 to 5 times a day. You're going to get feedback 4 to 5 times. So you have to get used to that. And find yourself a mentor. I would really say that, because it makes a big difference when you have someone when you have someone one-to-one. So you have a role model to look up to. You have someone who you can ask how you... Because you can take feedback from quite a lot of people, right? But if you are finding yourself one mentor, then you are very well... He's very well concentrating on your development. You're very well concentrating on your development as well. And you are working on your shots. Like, I mean, I'm nothing today if it wasn't for Keegan or Marcel or Josh. You know, I had to chase these people. And I had to get feedback. I had to get reviews. I had to learn through them. And I did it because I wanted to. So have that fighting spirit. Have that... chase them. It's fine. They're not going to get angry or something. Maybe don't annoy them over and over. But chase them. Get in touch. I think Keegan does one-to-one as well. No, I'm not sure about that. But Josh does one-to-one, I'm sure. Get in touch with Josh. Get in touch with Keegan. Get in touch with Marcel if you want to. Get in touch with the ones I know of. So it would be these three mainly. Chris Fryer. And just keep learning, keep improving. And yeah, keep trying.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Rishabh. And we'll definitely get back in touch and see how your career progresses in the future. So thank you so much for your time. Yeah. And if anyone has any questions for Rishabh, please post them in the comments.